just step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 738. I am Lisa Sheps, and I am joined by my guest co-host, Tony Knight.
Hola, mi gente.
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. Remember, if it's theater, it's on Offstage and On the Air. Please, please stay with us.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. Show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
Of the Starlight Express.
It is Wednesday, September 20th, 2023. I'd like to say Lashana Tova to all my fellow Jewish friends out there. Happy New Year. On the show today, we have the Melange Theater Company and their show, Death on the Half Shell. Later, we'll be talking to City Theater and their show, No Exit. And of course, we're going to have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, and Madison, Wisconsin. Stick with us. Starlight Express, Starlight Express. Tony, you're shrugging at me, and and shrugging doesn't work on the radio.
Doesn't read.
It's still doing it.
Yeah. So I take it you don't know Starlight Express.
I don't.
Oh my! Is it making a comeback?
It is. Well, you just be very patient, and you'll learn everything.
Okay.
I haven't even introduced you yet.
No, they don't know
who are
I
you
am.
Anyway.
I don't know who I am. Peanut
so
gallery.
So first, I want to welcome Tony Knight back to being a co-host.
Thank you, Lisa.
Nicole Shiro came down with stomach bugs today, and
like
so
multiple.
I told her yes, there's four of them.
Ooh,
four bugs.
That's a lot.
I don't know. I made all that up. But I was happy that you were available and willing to come in and play with me.
Always with
I've
you.
Always enjoyed playing with you. And since they are eager to talk, which is a really, really good thing, I'm going to introduce the other folks that are here with us. We have Rita Anderson. Hi, Rita.
Hi, Lisa. How are you? Thanks for having us.
Oh, you're welcome. And Karen Jambon.
Hello, hello.
And Nikki Zook.
Howdy.
All offstage and on the air veterans.
Yeah, been here before, yeah.
Yeah. So I played Starlight Express mainly because this was before I knew Nicole wasn't going to be able to make it. She loves Starlight Express, and I have never seen it and know very little about it. Anybody here ever see it?
It was playing in New York when we lived there, but I never had even a desire to see it.
Me too.
Doesn't
Cats
know
was
it
playing
is.
In New York the whole time I was there, and I never went to see that.
Did not bode well.
Exactly.
So it's going to return to London next year at the Troubadour Wembley Park Theater. It's going to begin previews in June 8th of 2024. This, of course, is an Andrew Lloyd Webber production. And this is actually the second show produced by Lloyd Webber Harrison Musicals. And that's the partnership between Andrew Lloyd Webber and Michael Harrison. So that's interesting that they're going to do it. They're saying that the teaser here is watch out for the big new plot twist.
All right.
And I don't remember the first plot twist, so that's good.
So it's all twist for you, no matter what.
There were roller skates.
Yes, that's all I knew about
skates.
It. So it opened on Broadway March 15th, 1987. It played 22 previews and 761 regular performances at the Gershwin.
That's a couple.
It was nominated for 7 Tony Awards. And it won for costume design, which I do remember the pictures of it and saying it's visually
stunning.
Fascinating.
Is it a certain era?
80s.
Oh, 80s.
Yep, 80s. I don't know if y'all, I think maybe all of us might remember the 80s. Roller skates were really big there.
Yes.
I actually bought a pair of roller skates. I lived on 162nd Street. I had a friend that lived on 170s. I looked 162nd. She lived at 175th. And I bought some roller skates because I thought it'd be fun to, that's how I could get there faster. I tried it once.
I used to roller skate in Central Park.
Yeah.
And that was a big deal. And one time when I was roller skating, I saw Diane Keaton just walking along carrying a picture.
There you go. Did you elbow her or steal the picture?
No, I was too afraid of falling down because I was not a very good roller skater.
Anyway, I never really knew what it is about, and here is a description. In the musical, a child's train set magically comes to life, and the engines race to become the fastest in the world. Rusty the steam train has little hope of winning until he is inspired by the legend of the Starlight Express.
Mm. And it's Starlight. Not a Christmas special.
It sounds like a Christmas special, doesn't it?
Starring Tom Hanks.
Yeah. Starring Tom Hanks. And I have to tell you that I even forgot the name of it. That is a, I find that movie creepy.
The Polar Express.
Yes, because those characters, they're almost too
almost
real.
Almost claymation.
They're too real
it's
and it's
the
creepy.
Uncanny Valley.
It's what?
It's the Uncanny Valley.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what that means. But
they look just human enough, but not quite human enough that it freaks you out.
Yeah, it is. It totally freaked me out. So we did have a loss on Broadway. Mm. Michael McGrath passed away at 65. And they did not say the cause of death. He is, he's not recognizable on the street, but he was a mainstay in Broadway theater. He made his Broadway debut in the ensemble of My Favorite Year back in the 80s. He also worked at, it just as I read his obituary, he worked at Theater by the Sea in Manotoc, Rhode Island, if you remember that. My roommate Mark Baltazar was stage manager there for like 5 or 6 years, so they probably knew each other. He won a Tony for in 2012 for Nice Work If You Can Get It. And he was in Spamalot. Played three different roles, but the one that most people would remember him for is Patsy with the coconut.
Yep.
So it's interesting when they talk about Nice Work If You Can Get It. If y'all remember, that was the Matthew Broderick and Kelly O'Hara vehicle. But the people that got the Tonys were Michael McGrath and Judy Kaye.
Yeah. Huh.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Not to all drop right. a name, but I worked with Judy Kaye. Ooh, there you go. Right.
She said name drop. Mm-hmm.
Shit, yeah. So anyway, rest in peace, Michael McGrath. Mm-hmm. So that's that I want to speak about. Did anybody see, we talked about this a little bit last week, but Theater Camp, do y'all know about Theater Camp?
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I know about it, but I haven't seen it
It's
yet
available
either.
On Hulu now, because I was really excited when it came out in the theaters. And they didn't make a big announcement. I was just trudging through the channels and saw Theater Camp on Hulu. And I watched it. Last week at this time, I had watched half of it or parts of it, and I was able to finish it. It's actually pretty good.
Okay.
It is exactly what you think it is, except maybe a little cut above. The original musical they did was actually really good, and the kids that were in it, so talented.
Awesome.
Good.
It's on my list. I'm definitely going to see it.
Good.
It's an easy watch, and it's the kind of thing that you can stop, go eat dinner and come back and catch it. It's like you could see it over several.
So is it a show with music or actually a musical?
It is a movie.
Right.
With music, but within
but not
it, there's
classified as a musical.
It's not a musical in the strict sense of the word, but it's got they produce a musical.
Okay,
and we see that, but not in its entirety. Most of it.
So a little meta.
Yes. It's it is a show within a show, as they say. But I definitely worth watching. Ben Platt is amazing. And the woman that plays his counterpart, I don't know her name. She was really good as well. Definitely worth watching.
Awesome.
Right.
Thank you.
For the recommendation.
Okay. That's it. So the Pearlman Arts Center, do y'all know what that is?
No.
We've talked about it on the show before.
It's down near the World Trade Center.
It is in the World Trade Center.
The architecture is supposed to be amazing.
Amazing. And it's after a long, I don't know if a long delay, but it just opened.
Right.
And it's the Pearlman Performing Arts Center. It opened on Thursday night at the World Trade Center site. Amanda Gorman, the poet, opened the whole thing.
Love her.
Has lots of different performances. We talked about it on this show, I'm going to say about 2 months ago or so, about what it is and what they've got a mission of producing stuff that uplifts New York and New York stories. And I just have to say, I was just in general in the whole campus of the World Trade Center, along with the memorial site, which I think they did just such an amazing job mm-hmm. with. I'm really proud. It took them way too long to get it done, but I'm really proud of how New York handled
yes, mm-hmm. and it's the continuing because it's a process.
Group. Yes,
yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, Perlman was the one that financed it, got it done, but Bloomberg was really the driving force behind it, hmm. which I did not realize. It, of course, when it first started, it was going to be about 150 to 2 million. And you know what they say? Twice as much, twice as long, and it ended up costing 500 million.
Yep. Wow. Yep.
I wish yep. they had just asked me for the money. I could have done mm-hmm. it. But Cynthia Erivo sang. I mean, everybody was just, it looks wow. amazing. And they showed, I think it was New York Times had a piece about it when we talked about it before. And they showed pictures of what the theater spaces were like and everything. And it's just mm-hmm. amazing. Mm-hmm. New York doesn't have enough theater spaces.
No. It's strangely enough, it really doesn't.
No, it's strangely enough, yeah. it doesn't. But, you know, speaking of that, everybody's talking about, and we've been talking about this on the show a lot, and I should say that the opinions expressed here on Offstage and On the Air are not necessarily those of Co-op Radio, the board of directors, or its staff and underwriters, but simply my lefty liberal opinion. But Broadway is back, but like, every other theater is not.
Right.
Yeah. That's correct.
Yeah. And it says Broadway is coming back pretty strong. The audiences are there. The money's there. We just keep talking. And I it's actually not on my list of stuff to talk about because I've talked about it every single week.
Well, it's
about,
important. It's a big issue.
All the theaters that are closing up. On the better side, so the Unsinkable Molly Brown. Who likes that show? Anybody?
I enjoyed the movie.
I
saw the movie. Yep.
Yes. That was the movie.
And Harv Presnell.
Tammy Grimes was on yep. Broadway. It opened mm-hmm. in 1960. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's very close to my heart because I was 2 years old in 1960. My parents went to see it, and my father constantly was singing, "I want to learn to read and write." Constantly. And so
that's
when I think of the Unsinkable Molly sure. Brown, I think of my father. It's problematic. It's not done very long. This was a follow up to A Music Man. Is it Linford Wilson?
Meredith Wilson.
Thank yeah. you. Uh-huh. Thank you. So that was their follow up to The Music Man, which was just such a huge hit. And, mm-hmm. and Molly Brown did not do as yeah. well. But they updated it, and Beth Level.
They put it on a different
Beth Malone,
ship
sorry.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. Not the Titanic anymore. You know what it is? The Minnow.
It was on a Royal Caribbean cruise line, and they just sailed right through.
Out of the Titanic. Okay.
No, they
a carnival cruise.
They made the character of Molly Brown more in line with who she was.
Who she really was.
And it deals with immigration, feminism, and all the things
hey,
that are...
I can get behind that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It updated a lot of the themes mm-hmm. to a more contemporary audience, and they had completely rewritten it, not completely re-updated it, and it's going to be licensed. It's open up. Music Theater International is going to be open up the license, but before they open up the license, they're doing a cool thing. So it's the Education Theater Foundation, the Music Man Foundation, and Music Theater International are going to fund 10 high schools to perform it before they open up wow. the rights to everybody else. And
that's
they're going to get
nice.
10 schools are going to get a $10,000 grant each.
Oh, wow.
And their schools are invited to apply. So Austin Schools, you've got until October 27th to apply.
That's a great initiative.
Wow.
Applicants are going to be asked to show plans to use their work as a tool to engage their school and community in the musical's themes, which include women's and immigrants' rights, community building, and Molly Brown's civic-minded Share the Luck spirit. It is the script is available at no cost right now. And you can go to when I post the show offstageonair.com. There's a link in this article that was taken from playbill.com, written by Logan Colwell Block. And you can get that if you want to read it.
That's awesome.
So it premiered, the revised one premiered at the Denver Center for Performing Arts In 2014, Kathleen Marshall directed. And then, of course, I talked about Beth Malone, former guest on Offstage and On the Air, was in that. So that's...
Friends in High Places.
Yeah, yeah. We're very important here.
Yes.
At Ground Floor, at Offstage and On the Air. So did y'all also hear, so we all know that Sweeney Todd is playing now with Josh Groban and Annalee Ashford.
Yeah.
And I will say, since she's not here, and I know she would say it if she were here, Nicole had tickets to see them, and the night she had tickets, both the Grobes and Annalee Ashford were out.
No.
So she didn't go.
No, man, no.
So, you know, COVID is rearing its ugly head again. Yeah. Yeah. They had 13 cast members out. That's a different story. That's Beautiful Noise. What I'm talking about is they had, Sweeney Todd had technical difficulties on a show.
Okay.
On a particular performance. Josh Groban wasn't in it, but Annalee Ashford was. So they did a concert of Act One.
What?
So right at Tommy Cail, who directed it, he came out to the audience and he said, quote, "The cast is ready to go. This is a fearless and intrepid group as possible. It's 7:08 when you were all very patiently waiting outside. We said to them," this was after they announced that they were not going to be doing the show that night, "Hey, remember how we thought we were doing a show? What if?" And they all said, "Let's go, let's go, let's go." So they came out and did basically all of Act One as a concert.
Oh, amazing.
The patrons all received full refunds.
The show must go on.
That's awesome.
And they found a way.
They found a way to do it. So that's great for Sweeney Todd. And now, seeing how we're running out of time, I have to now decide what I want to talk about. Pearly Victorious. I want to talk about Pearly Victorious.
Reopening.
So this is opened in 1961. Mm-hmm. Ozzie Davis, Ruby Dee.
Wow.
He wrote it and performed in it. I've never seen it.
I saw it here in Austin. Boyd Vance did it years ago with Judy Arnold. It was that state theater.
Was it Pro Arts Collective that did it?
I don't remember who was the producing, but it had to be Boyd Vance's company, and it was at the State Theater, and it was wonderful. It was lovely.
Oh, God. Yeah. We were just talking about that, and speaking of Boyd Vance, we're very happy. You know, the city announced funding for everything, and Spectrum Theater, which was the inherited Pro Arts, got a nice grant, so I'm very, very happy. Anyway, it's going to be open up again 60 years after the fact with Leslie Odom Jr. and Carrie Young, directed by Kenny Leone, at the Music Box Theater, one of my favorite theaters. Mm-hmm. So here's, for those of you who don't know it, and you can tell us if we're right, or if Salamish Shah Tillet is right. Set in the 1950s on a plantation in the segregated South, the story follows Pearly's return home to Georgia to claim a $500 inheritance, which he wants to use to buy and integrate the local church. To prevent Captain Kotchapi, the white plantation owner, from usurping his family's birthright, Pearly has to trick Kotchapi, a plan that will also involve recruiting the unsuspecting Ludie Bell to stand in for his recently deceased cousin B, who is the rightful inheritor of the money. In other words, Pearly's strategy hinges on Kotchapi's inability to differentiate one black woman from another, and in doing so, the play uses comedy to expose racism as acerb, arbitrary, and detrimental to black life. This is a really interesting article. It's set as after the introduction of the article, it's an interview with Leslie Odom Jr., Kenny Leone, and I forgot her name already, Carrie Young, but talking about the making of this and how Ruby Dee didn't like it because the comedy, you know, it's satire, so
it's broad.
It's very broad humor, but it sounds amazing. I would look forward to see it. It ran for almost a year, and some of the guests were W.E.B. Du Bois, Dr. King, Malcolm X. They all saw it.
Wow.
Isn't that pretty neat?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And the last thing I'm going to talk about is A Beautiful Noise before we go to break. A Beautiful Noise, as you know, is that's what I was talking about when everybody was sick. Yeah. They had 13 people out sick. The associate director, what's his name? Austin Reagan stepped in. And they had these 13 outs because of COVID-19, which is really
well. We keep getting new variants.
Yeah.
So yep. I mean, it's like cops and robbers, I think.
Anyway, he said in his Instagram, he said, "Yesterday was a crazy day. I have literally 199 Instagram messages from all of you darling friends. I have to thank everyone at the Broadhurst and in the ABN company for getting me clothed, prepared, choreographed. It was bonkers day at the theater for so many reasons. And me somehow being on stage in a principal track, two roles, and even doing a quick change was only one of them. Although perhaps the craziest, feeling so lucky to be honored to have a life in theater and most happy I didn't fall down on Broadway." I thought that was great. So we're going to take a break and listen to a little bit of a song from A Beautiful Noise that I did not realize that Neil Diamond wrote this song. And we'll just talk about it when we come back because I just want people to hear the music. We'll be right back. I thought love was born less. We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Tony.
Hello.
And we had a great time talking. So that song was obviously I'm a believer that the Monkees made famous, really? That I did not realize that Neil Diamond wrote.
Yep.
Yes. And then it was, well, for this generation, it was got famous in Shrek.
Yeah.
I believe it sort of had a resurgence.
Yes, it did. It did. I love Shrek. But I don't want to give that credit for that.
No, because
it's
also
all Neil's.
Love the Monkees. So I'm going to reintroduce our guests here because now we're going to talk about why they're here, which is an original play called Death on the Half Shell, Two Comic Tales of Death and the Absurdity of Life. Don't know anything about that. produced by the Melange Theater Company. And we have here the playwright herself, Rita Anderson.
Hi. Great to be here.
And the director extraordinaire, Karen Jambone.
Hello.
And one of the performers, Nikki Zook.
Hi.
I'm so excited to hear about this show. It's that we were actually, Tony and I were talking before we went on about how excited we are about this. And being an oyster lover, I'm good with anything on the half shell. So same. Tell us about the show.
So Death on the Half Shell was developed at Missouri State University by the BFA actors. And but it's never had a full production, so this is the world premiere, and it is in the absurdist comedy. I call it a kooky spooky play, right in time, and it opens first day, which is tomorrow, first day of fall. Not that we're getting those temps, but here in the 512. So it's on the half shell because there's two different one acts, and the first one is called Threes. And this is the synopsis. Threes is an absurd spin on the urban legend, all actors die in threes. As three older actors, former classmates at Juilliard, meet again at the advance obituary office after their 15 minutes of fame is gone and the jig is up. Part two is Final Conversations, and it revolves a mother who wakes one morning knowing that son only has an hour to live, and with an absurd everything but the kitchen sink approach, she attempts to have one real conversation with son before he's gone, none of which alters destiny. So doesn't that sound hilarious?
It does. Is it indeed a comedy?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Maybe they can speak
so,
to it.
So, Karen, I have to tell you that nodding does not work on the radio.
I'm just agreeing with what Rita's saying. That's all.
Yeah. So tell us a bit. So it's a comedy.
Yeah, it is a comedy. The first play, absolutely. The second play, yes. There are a great many comedic elements involved, and Will Douglas and Melissa Vogt, who play mother and son, and are also in the first play.
When you say Melissa Vogt, do you mean Melissa McKnight?
McKnight. That's right. I apologize, Melissa.
I was curious.
I apologize. I've just known Vogt much longer than McKnight.
Me too.
Anyway, they do a great job, but there's a lot of comedy in it. And then in the first play, Nikki, Tim Blackwood, and Ann Hulsman are also round out that cast. And I couldn't ask for a better cast. They are just hysterical together.
They truly are. And to speak to the comedy, the characters are actually types. Like Nikki, you play?
Elitist.
Who only does high art.
Well, of course.
And has just come off of
I specialize in Shakespeare.
And so Ann Hulsman plays average. And her big call to fame was that she made a bunch of cat dog food. I
dog food.
Dog dogs, food. Not cats.
They were dogs.
Dog food commercials. And the only sort of name actor is Tim, and he plays Rock Hard, who did 7,000 action films. So, yes, it is a comedy. And then we have the two millennials that run the office, the Advance Obituary Office, Holly and Hunter. Holly
of
Hunter.
Of course.
Holly Hunter. But they don't know who. They don't get that. That's also maybe a joke.
Yes. Okay,
Holly, they're too young. Yep.
So you. So this was developed. How long ago?
I wrote it in grad school. I have two masters, so at Texas State. I wrote threes because theater is so cutthroat, and everybody was so competitive, and so I just kind of made these. Prototypes, these archetypes, you know, your average person that wants to be famous, it's all about that. You know, what do you consider it is to be successful and what do you consider happiness?
So this is a world premiere and a new piece. And one of the things I love as a director, and Karen, I'm sure you'll agree, and I'll probably read it as a playwright as well, is just that process of how things change and shift as we are molding this new work.
Playwrights adding lines in a week before we open?
That's the one. So that's my question, is how much of that have we done in this? Has it shifted a lot?
Not that much. I mean, Rita added a few things. And mm-hmm. what I always like about working with Rita is when we work with the cast, we start rehearsing and people say, well, what about this? Yep. Can we do this differently? Or can we? And I'll take it to Rita and she'll go, yeah, absolutely. If that works better, let's do it that way. So I love that collaborative process.
Well, that's great. And we talk about this kind of on this show ad nauseum, but it's like the playwright, when they come to the director, they work together, and then the script you go to rehearsal with has got some differences in, and then you bring the actors and all of the things that they bring with it. And it's the joy of the creative process.
It is. It's living, breathing, and it's a collaboration. Like just last night, Melissa did something. We're not going to say what it is. And we were all like,
That was perfect.
That's it.
That's wonderful.
Keep it. Perfect. So, absolutely.
So we just
did. So after I see it, will you tell me?
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So we just did a world premiere at Ground Floor Theater, and actually Tony was part of it. Yeah. And one of the questions the cast asked me, like early on, when are you going to lock the show? And I said, opening night. That's when we will have no more changes.
That's how it went, too.
And which we pretty much did.
Yeah, we rolled with that.
So that's amazing. Y'all are going to do a little piece for us today, yes?
Oh, yay.
Yes. You want to set that up?
Somebody? Unfortunately, Ann Hulsman couldn't be here today, so I'm going to read her part, and I will not do nearly the job that Ann is doing.
No, because you're not a very good actor.
I'm not.
I've heard that.
And I haven't been directing myself in this for weeks. So Average has already been at the office, and she's gone off to the ladies' room. And meanwhile, Elitist has come into the Advance Obituary office and has had her little tete-a-tete with the millennials. And Average is now coming back and sees Elitist.
And they haven't seen each other
since
college.
Juilliard. They all went to Juilliard together.
Of course they did.
I mean, didn't everybody go to Juilliard?
Of course.
Yes.
Okay, well, this is Nikki Zook, and standing in for Ann Hausman is Karen Jambon, doing a scene from Death on the Half Shell, produced by Melange Theater.
Oh, not you two.
You're here?
Pardon?
Well, that is to say, well, hello, darling, you're here. What a journey life has been, that this is where we'd have our reunion.
Funny, isn't it?
I had expected perhaps a different crowd.
Well, that desk jockey acts like she doesn't even know me.
Yes. Well, that makes me feel worlds better.
She didn't recognize me either. Hey.
Well, I must say, your little cat commercials were darling, really.
They were dogs.
Well, absolutely ferocious. Rough.
You wouldn't laugh if you saw the residuals.
I was blessed to live a commercial-free life.
No, your work was never commercial. You got that right.
Although there is no escaping advertisements.
Hey, I got a lifetime supply of dog food with those commercials.
No, that's just sad.
Although it doesn't taste good, no matter what the can says.
I think they might be expecting someone, but I don't know who they are. I mean, what does that make me? Chopped liver?
Chopped liver plus, yeah, it's a chicken flavor. Oh, those dog food commercials were my bread and butter. Although it's a small loaf.
And not the freshest margarine.
Well, How about you? How did you fare?
Oh, I just finished a stint with the Royal Shakespeare Company.
Oh, so you've taken a breather then from those bizarre one-woman shows?
Well, it does take a certain intellect, dear, to appreciate the avant-garde.
Oh, is that what you're calling it?
Although, as you know, I specialized in Shakespeare.
So did you reprise your role as the lead witch in Macbeth?
That's amazing. That's amazing. And definitely a comedy.
Yes.
I do have to say, you know, you have to. You're breaking some traditions about using Macbeth in a show, which happens in a theater. There are. I know some people that would probably turn down the rules just because of that. I'm not one of them. I don't believe in that superstition. What fun! That sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh yeah.
And I'm assuming it just goes on from there.
Oh, it gets wilder, and it's a wild and crazy ride. It is.
And I do have to just fact check a little bit. I did. Me and a friend of mine years ago did try different flavored dog biscuits. they all taste the same.
So you do have personal experience.
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Life.
I do. Well, God, that what? That's a lot of fun.
It is.
And so when you're opening tomorrow?
Tomorrow, and we run for 3 weeks.
Yep.
Yes. Yay!
I assume you're all ready.
Yes, indeed. Our last tech is tonight, and I think they did a phenomenal job last night. I'm always worried when it goes so smoothly during tech week. You always want at least one really bad night, and we haven't had that yet. But I'm hoping it's not tonight.
And Amy Lewis is doing lights, and Lowell Bartholomew is doing sound and video design.
Yeah.
Yep.
Awesome.
No.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong with those two.
No.
Anybody else you want to shout out to on the team? Anything else about the show?
Just happy. I mean, again, I love the cast. I love working with Rita. Rita's husband he married into the theater. What can I say?
Theater widow.
So he's helped us with the set. He is actually running sound and projection.
Oh,
so
wow.
Again,
Our stage manager,
Oscar Bryan. Oscar was in our last show. So we are really
and
pleased.
And C.B. Feller did the painting of the scenic art.
Lovely. Yeah. Great.
We saw a photo. It's beautiful.
So we've had a great, team. We have a great
I was
team.
Just talking about Oscar yesterday. And so if you're listening, Oscar, look for a communication from me very soon. Great. And so what theater are y'all playing at?
Trinity
Street, which is great. I will tell people, I tell this every time we talk about Trinity, people get nervous because it's downtown about parking, and parking there is a breeze.
There's a ton of parking.
So don't let that stop you. And you play through, do you know the closing date?
October
8th. Wonderful. Well, thank you. Oh, and where can folks go to get more information about the show? I could tell you.
Yes,
why don't you?
Okay. I would go to melangetheater.com.
Yes.
And that's where you can find all the information that you need. Well, thank y'all
thank
so
you,
much.
Thank you, guys. We love
being on
the
show. Thank you, Tony. Great to see
we
you
We love
again.
Being on here.
We had a great. We love having you. We had a great time.
Yep.
Okay, that was Arita Anderson, Karen Jambon, and Nikki Zook of Melange Theater's production of Death on the Half Shell, two comic tales of death and the absurdity of life, playing tomorrow, the 21st of September through October 8th. For more information, Melange, that's M-E-L-E-N-G-E, theater.com. Here is from Something Rotten that we talked about. Oh, no, we weren't talking about Something Rotten, but this is the Black Death.
Very perfect.
That fits.
The Black Death! Black Death! Oh, the Black
we are
Death.
Back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Tony.
Hello.
Hello. Well, we just have time to talk about our local stuff that's happening here. And I wanted to point out something I saw that Texas Performing Arts is doing, which looks just amazing. It's called Momix.
Okay.
And I'm just going to read the event information. It says, seamlessly blending illusion, acrobatics, magic, and whimsy, Momix sends audiences flying down the rabbit hole in Moses Pendleton's newest creation, Alice, inspired by Lewis Carroll's classic Alice in Wonderland. Join this dazzling company on a mind-bending adventure as Alice encounters time-honored characters. What my little piece of paper here doesn't have is the photograph that went with this. It looks pretty amazing. So I'm just going to show everybody that's what it looks like right now.
I enjoy mind bending.
Yeah, me too. It looks pretty amazing. That's the kind of thing I like. I will say we're talking about local stuff. The City of Austin Cultural Funding Awards for the Elevate Grant were announced, and a lot of theater companies got grants. It has been a long time coming to get city funding back. So it's good for some. Some people were disappointed because, as opposed to years past, this was a competitive grant. So not everybody got funded, but many people did. So congratulations to those that did. Other things that are happening locally are Pipeline, Alchemy Theater. You have one more. This is your last weekend to see that. And that's directed by Ground Floor Theater Development Director Simone Alexander. Hyde Park Theater, one more weekend to see Caught, which I saw, and I think it's worth seeing. And then Gaslight Baker out in Lockhart has Somewhere also this weekend. Zach has two things. Hershey Felder as George Gershwin Alone, which is supposed to be phenomenal.
Amazing.
Yeah, that's it. That's all I want to say. And then The Girl Who Became Legend, that's a Sarah Sawtwick original, theater for young audience. With lots of great people that are involved in it. Our dear friend Amber Quick and other people are involved. And over at St. Ed's at the Mary Moody Northern Theater, Antigonic, which is Antigone, Sophocles, which you know is my favorite.
That's what you were saying. Yeah.
Love Sophocles.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. I don't like Sophocles. and then Raven Winged Hours. We had them on our show, The Evening with Edgar Allan Poe by the Archive Theater. They're in their last weekend. They were on the show last week. Next week, and I think you and I are going on the same day. I'm actually going October 3rd.
Oh, so we're not going
We're not
same
going
day.
The same day. Six, which I am looking so forward to
Me
seeing.
Me too. I'll go with you. I'll go
and
twice.
And then Austin Playhouse has The Norwegians, which opens up on the 22nd through the 15th, which is an original written by somebody. I didn't write it down.
Densby?
Maybe. Densby. And that's it. And I know that we can't talk about it, but you have an announcement that you're going to make at some point in the future.
Someday I will make a big announcement.
So which is really good. As far as I'm concerned, Tony Knight, you should be working every day of your life.
Aw, thank you.
You should be in every show.
All right, then.
All right. Let's do Today in Theater History, shall we? We shall.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm ready. Braced.
So I'll start with the birthdays. It's the birthday of Emily Paget. Chalia Latour. Anybody know who that is? We have guests here that I haven't introduced yet. Yeah, okay.
They're doing a lot of nodding and miming.
Well, which is good because their microphones aren't on. I'm going to go ahead and turn them on. You'll learn who they are in a second. Anne Mira.
Aww.
1929.
I
She's
loved
4 years older than my father, younger than my father. Lee Hall, who I don't know. James Colby. Who you would recognize, but I don't know. I don't know what he's done. He's younger than I am. I'm going to set that down there. And then Albert Marre. I don't know. The guests are making faces again. opening in 1962 was The Affair. In 1976, I meant to look this up because I'm not aware of this. This is the year before I moved to New York. It's I Have a Dream. It's obviously a Martin Luther King play because it's basically got a picture of Martin Luther King on the playbill.
Yeah, that's a big clue.
It opened at the Ambassador Theater in 76. Yubi, which doesn't have a cast album. Which I don't understand. So it was a musical. I think it might have been a jukebox musical, Yubi Blake music. Because I was going to play that, but instead we're going to be hearing from another musical that opened in 2001 that some people like, some people don't like. It's called Urinetown. Show of hands here in the studio, who likes Urinetown? Who doesn't like Urinetown? Who could care less or don't know anything about it?
Boop,
yeah.
Just me.
I'm middle of the road. I'm middle of the road about it. So lots of stuff happening in Austin, as usual. The weather's going to get better, so I would really encourage my listeners to go see some theater this weekend.
Yay!
There's lots of really good choices to make, including our next guest, which is Valerie French. Yes, which you will learn all about in a little minute. So let's take a little break. Let's listen to a song from Urinetown called I See a River, and we know it's a river of. We'll be right back.
A river.
We are BACK back. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined by guest co-host. You say your own name.
My name is Tony Knight.
Tony Knight.
Woo!
the incomparable Tony Knight has graced us with our presence. So anything you want to bring to the party? Anything you want to talk about?
No.
Okay, I do. I want to bring something to the party to talk about. But you know what? Let me introduce our guests, and then we'll allow them in, and then we'll talk about the show.
All right.
So I just want to introduce everybody here. Alexandra Russo.
Hello.
Hi. We have Sebastian Garcia.
Hello.
Darren Scharf.
Hello.
And somebody named Jeff Hinkle.
Hello, Lisa. How are
you? I believe all of you are veterans to this show.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Yep. Good. So I just want to talk about, I should have talked about during our local thing, Ground Floor Theater does a musical every December. And we did a workshop of that musical because we have commissioned a world premiere musical called Jack and Aiden. And we did a workshop of it, which performed last Monday night. And you were there in the audience.
Yes, I saw it. And it was amazing. I truly had that feeling that I'm seeing something so special, and I'm really excited for the rest of Austin to get to see it. And honestly, I think it's going to be big.
I do as well. And we commissioned Lane Michael Stanley, who knows many people here in Austin. He graduated from University of Texas with a master's in directing and playwriting, I think. And he discovered this composer named Tova Katz in L.A., who's wonderful. And together they put together a really wonderful show, and we commissioned it. So that was fun. But what I found, what I want to talk about that I find so interesting, and anybody else who's done anything similar is really great. So a brand new, very complex musical, musically musical, we came together as, you know, five or six strangers to each other on Wednesday of last week, and worked 8 hours a day for 5 days to learn all of the music, all of the text. We did, it was a workshop, so we were reading from the script, but it was minor. It was staged a little bit. And it's just amazing to watch that process and to see it performed after 5 days.
It did not seem like 5 days. It was incredibly polished for 5 days of rehearsal, and it's brilliant.
Yep. So that was really fun. I loved having y'all there. We had about 30 people in the audience, and so next time we send something out, y'all might want to check it. You might want to come check us out because things are doing it, or anybody. I think seeing a developmental piece, and I'll just open this up to everybody before we talk about why y'all are here, if we ever get to that. seeing a developmental piece as a workshop followed shortly thereafter by the full production, I think it'd be fascinating.
Super fun.
And it's sort of like what we talked about with Death on the Half Shells. Like, it's a new piece. And so to be in that first rehearsal and then see what they open with has got to be very interesting. Mm-hmm. So another brand new world premiere show is called No Exit. It's never been done before. Jean-Paul Sartre.
You say it really great.
Well, yeah, I lived in France for a long time, you know. That's not true.
Yeah, it's a big lie.
No Exit, which I have to admit, I have never seen. But City Theater is doing a production of that, and we are fortunate enough to have Jeff Hinkle, who is the director.
Yes.
I'm guessing. And then three of the performers, and we already introduced them. That's Darren Scharf, Sebastian Garcia, and Alexandra Russo. Jeff, tell us, if you don't know, I actually had to look it up because I've never seen it, nor have I ever read it. And I knew about it. But after I've read the description, I want to go see it.
Great. We want to have you there. It's a great classic play, and it's fascinating. I have the same kind of experience that you have. I saw it once in Canada, and I was really
hungover. Of course it's Canada.
And I was off the record. I was really hungover, so kind of my memory of it was a little vague. But in grad school, when I was working on my MFA, it was a play that we read that's really impacted a lot of my decisions in other plays and kind of the theological concept sometimes. You know, you're doing a play, and your person's a like Sweeney Todd. You know, when I staged Sweeney Todd, I actually was very informed by No Exit because I was like, how do I start this play and how do I end it and what am I going for? And one of the things we discussed when we were studying the text was that hell for these people is the hell they're in, but for other people, their hells can be other things.
Sure.
And that really kind of informed my decision in that play. It was interesting. There was a little window of opportunity that City Theater had, and Clay Avery, the board president, and I met at Starbucks, or no, at a Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
And he was like, you need to put a play on. And I was like, would you put a play on for us? And I was like, okay. And we just kind of discussed plays we like to do with a smaller cast that had kind of rich acting opportunities and an interesting story. And
if you were to explain the plot in like a couple of sentences, what would you say?
Three strangers are in a room after they have passed away, and they feel like they should be in hell, but all the things that they've been taught in their life about what hell is not present, and then they discover what hell really is.
Okay, and it is a three-hander, three actors in the whole show?
There's four actors.
Oh, four. Oh, right. There's the person.
There is the three folks that are in the room, and then there is kind of the demonic force in the play, who is kind of, you know, they're in
like the gatekeeperish kind of person, right?
He is, and that's Sebastian, who
hello.
Is just a delight.
Hello. Let me be your guide.
Okay, well, that actually leads into what I was gonna see what everybody's playing. So, Sebastian, tell us about your character.
Well, he is known as the valet.
That's the word I was trying to come up with, by the way.
So he guides new arrivals into their their final destination. In this case, just a small room with no windows. And it's just been very fun for me. I've been trying to figure out, am I some kind of famous demon in disguise? I've really been doing a lot of research on theology. I know nothing.
Okay, well.
But really, it's just fun. I approach it as kind of a silent movie performance with dialogue. You know, there's a lot of... I'm doing a lot of weird movements now.
Yeah, he's gesturing. Yeah. If you could only see it, you'd be laughing.
It works on radio. Well, that's amazing. Darren, tell us about your character.
I am Joseph Garson. I'm the first to be introduced to the room by the valet.
I like to call him a valet.
A valet.
That's just me, because I grew up in London. And
many, many years she spent there, yes.
That's fair. That's fair. Anyway, he's a man who's very full of himself. He's very sure of himself, in some ways, at least, you know, at first he is. But he's not going to be surprised. He wants to face the situation. He has no excuses for anything he's done in life. Some good, a lot of bad, you know. But anyway, and then he's introduced to his two roommates by the valet in short order.
Okay. And one of those roommates, I'm guessing, is Alexandra.
I am.
Who do you play?
I play Estelle. She's a French lady who does not like to be seen as coming off in any way offensive. She likes to have her view, you know, always be perfect. She likes to make sure that she is viewed perfectly, and she has no cracks in her head.
Okay. and who's our third character?
Oh, that's played by Dawn Aaron. That's Inez. And Inez is a lesbian character who she is kind of the foil to both these folks, even though they're kind of the foils for each other. One of the things, not to give anything away, but they're all temptations for each other. And and the presence of the third messes it up for everybody, you know, whichever third it is.
Got it. And you're prepared to do us a little scene, aren't you?
I'm not, but they are.
I was talking to the royal you. Do you want to set it up for us, though?
Sure. So one of the things that the folks get to have in hell is if people are talking about them or in their afterlife, they can view them. They can kind of part the thing to see what's going on. And so this is kind of one of their earlier kind of seeing and kind of lets you know who the people are, but them seeing who they're, what's going on in life after they've passed away.
Great. Well, this is the cast from City Theater's No Exit doing a scene from that very show.
Ah, yes, in your mind. But everything that goes on in one's head is so vague, isn't it? It makes one want to sleep. I have six big mirrors in my bedroom. There they are. I can see them, but they don't see me. They're reflecting the carpet, the settee, the window. But how empty it is, a glass in which I am absent. When I talked to people, I always made sure there was one near in which I could see myself. I watched myself talking, and somehow it kept me alert, seeing myself as the other saw me. Oh dear, My lipstick. I'm sure I've put it on all crooked. No, I can't do without a looking glass forever and ever. I simply can't.
Me neither. Totally, totally get it. And you're going to do another little piece, correct?
Is it possible if we can?
Yes, let's do it.
I'd like to do lots.
We have the time. Yeah, well, you get to. Okay, so you want to set this one up, or do we just carry on from where we...
This is Joseph Garson being introduced to his new new post-life living quarters by the Valet.
Great. So this is Sebastian Garcia and Darren Scharf doing a scene from City Theater's No Exit.
So here we are?
Yes, Mr. Garson.
And this is what it looks like?
Yes.
Second Empire furniture, I see. Well, I dare say one gets used to it in time.
Some do, some don't.
Are all the other rooms like this one?
How could they be? We cater to all sorts. Buddhists and Hindus, for instance. What use would they have for a Second Empire chair?
What use do you suppose I have for one? You know who I was? Well, it's no great matter. I had quite a habit of living among furniture that I didn't relish and even come to like it. A false position in a Louis Philippe dining room. You know the style? Well, it had its points, bogus and bogus, so to speak.
And you'll find living in a Second Empire drawing room has its points.
Damn it, they might have left me my toothbrush.
Ah, you must have your little jokes, sir.
No, I wasn't joking.
Sorry, sir, no offense meant. But all of our guests, they ask me the same questions. Silly questions, if you'll pardon me saying so. Where's the torture chamber? That's the first thing they ask, all of them. But then, after a bit, once they've got their nerve back, they start in about their toothbrushes and whatnot. Good heavens, Mr. Garson, can't you use your brains? What, I ask you, would be the point of brushing your teeth?
Amazing. Good heavens, I love that choice of words that he uses. So this is obviously translated from French. Did you have several adaptations that you were looking at, or was this just the one you knew you wanted?
That's really fascinating, because there's a modern one that was done, I think, in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And this is the first English translation. Okay. And I like this one so much better. So we just went with that one.
Went
crazy.
I would actually choose the one I liked better too.
there are some subtle differences, but I think the more classic stuff kind of fits the time period. You know, mm-hmm. There's a lot of updating of some of the words. Like, they never use the word glass for a mirror, and I think that's kind of an important thing. Okay. Since they're through the looking glass of hell and stuff in the modern translation. And just one weird thing. I wish everybody would see the play like 4,000 times. Like, I've got to see it in rehearsal, because it's like an onion that keeps getting pulled back. And we were just talking out front about Brené Brown. I'm like, this is a play for her, you know, because so many of these psychological, or what we consider kind of psychology today, they're addressing before we had terms for it.
Yeah,
you know, really fascinating.
Well, that's amazing. You're already open.
Yes.
When do you close?
I think the first.
October 1st.
October 1st. And where can folks go to get more information about the show?
City Theater. Austin.org.
Oh, thank God. I never remember it.
You never can, Jeff. And you have come here on so many City Theater shows.
Only once. You've always rescued me when I've always looked at your desperation and fear in my eyes, and you take care of me.
One day I'm just going to have a little sign. I'll just put it up. Well, thank you all so much for being on the show, and best wishes for the rest of the year run.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Jeff Hinkle, Alexandra Russo, Darren Scharf, and Sebastian Garcia, all of City Theater's production of No Exit, playing now through October 1st. For more information, citytheateraustin.org. And this is from February House, and it's A Room Comes Together. We'll be right back.
A room comes together with the perfect...
A room comes together.
I don't know how to sing that.
So this was from a show called February House, which I had to look up, and I really couldn't get a definitive answer about what it was. But I believe it has to do with February House, which was a house that a fashion mogul did for fashion people to all stay and do creative
like
stuff
Airbnb
together.
For fashion,
kind of like that. Well, thank you once again for coming in at last minute, I might add, to
gave
play
me
with
45
us.
Seconds notice, and I did got
and
here
you
early.
Were. Well, thank you. I always love being with you, and I look forward to your announcement whenever it can be public.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me, Lisa.
Well, you are quite welcome. So that's it for Offstage and On the Air this week. Nicole will be back next week, hopefully. You need to also right now stand by for the Austin Cooperative Hour. This week it's Lights, Camera, Austin with my very dear friend Robert Sims. He's trying to like wind the microphone away from me right now, but I'm beating him back with a stick because I need to say my last word, which is we will be back next week when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air. And this is from a brand new recording of the musical called Millennials Are Killing Musicals. And this is a song called On a Plane. We'll see you next week, folks.
On a plane, I'm all alone. No one blowing up my phone. Sure, it's not a private jet. The only privacy I get. Coach your business, I don't care. I'm not washing underwear. Close my eyes, recline my seat. Cruising 20,000 feet.